Welcome to week 6 of Computing Corner. Sorry for the delay in posting. Medical reason is I have a busted elbow and it wasn't feasible to sit up yesterday or Sunday. Today I have enough Vicodin in me that I can believe I can proceed through this. So let's get started. We're on page 2 of the PDF for 2019. So page 2 out of 36 for the slides. We have the beginnings of sensitivity analysis. And what we have in Computing Corner as our agenda is to look, the main event is Rosenbaum's vignette, which is a publication in observational studies called 2R Packages for Sensitivity Analysis. And that'll give us the main program, Sensitivity MW and Sensitivity MV. We'll mainly concentrate on MW, which is primarily for one-to-one pair matching and has the most capabilities. MV extends that a little bit. And subsequent to putting this together, Rosenbaum came out with another package called Sensitivity Full. That's sensitivity, F-U-L-L, lowercase, no spaces. And you could look at that one also. There's no vignette for that as yet, but the manual has some details. We have two review questions. One for the mercury example, I redo it in my session and in the solution here for review question one, which is the main example in the Rosenbaum vignette, one-to-one pair matching. Review question two is a simple set of R commands for setting up a match data set, say from the output of MatchIt or UpMatch. You have to massage the data set, even in this simple case, a bit using merge. It's more complicated for one to two pair matching, and especially for the results of full matching. So I did one-to-one pair matching for you. That's review question two. Anyone who's looking for a project, especially for a third unit, if they want to write some more elegant code for one-to-one matching and use it also for one-to-k pair matching, or even take a crack at the sensitivity full data set. My student last year, Rocky, she did for her own purposes set up something for sensitivity full. She's an advanced programmer, and it was non-trivial for her. So we're going to work at the simplest. I'll tell you a kludge that would at least work for getting a feel for things. If you did full matching, is just take the cell means and treat those as one-to-one pair matching. Same goes for 0-1 outcomes, which the package rbounds does, which is Luke Keel. We'll see that. That's also linked here. That does 0-1 outcomes, let's say, fully. Of course, you could just treat them via t-test. That's not such a bad kludge. And any examples that we've looked at, it works out pretty well. So that's not so bad. The reason we're not going to delve deep into our bounds, although I always have the aspiration of doing a review question, is that it doesn't work off MatchIt or Cobalt or OpMatch or anything. It works off a separate matching package called Matching, capital M-A-T-C-H-I-N-G. And there's only so many different versions of doing this that we want to throw at you at once. But if you want to take a look at doing our bounds and matching package, that would be another great little project if you're looking for projects. So that's where we are. So our main March, and it's more focused than some of our other sessions where I've pulled in examples and pieces from lots of different places, is just to work through Rosenbaum's own exposition of his basic procedures, since he made it up, and this was the main thing, following the original Rosenbaum and Rubin, showing propensity score matching, and starting us on this path. Sensitivity was the next big topic. And it has some penetration into current research. Could always be more. Okay, we move to PDF page 3, which is a page taken from chapter 3 of Rosenbaum's book. I'm using this to put in front of you this very, very good book. Rosenbaum's book, which is available online right from the Stanford Libraries, is wonderful literature, especially in parts, and deserves to be prominent in your activities for the course. We probably don't put it in front of your faces enough, but that's why I'm doing it here, because it provides a very good platform for looking at the sensitivity stuff. So the beginning, section 3.4, starts out with the basic premise. The idea being, I did this wonderful study, best of my abilities, recreating the experiment I would have liked to do, having a set of background characteristics or covariates, bold X. Even if I did a good job by that, are there any unobserved variables that are important, use, that could have negated, say, my finding? If I have, for example, a significant effect of the intervention from this observational study from matching on X, could that just be an artifact of not having a full set of background characteristics that I needed? Therefore, I'd be off on the propensity score, and especially not having in the analysis a variable that was important for outcome. So what Rosenbaum always calls a naive model is pretending that the covariates you had are all you need. Could there be more, and could it have an effect? And so we're going to ask ourselves if there's something else that really messed up our estimation or propensity score and was also important for outcome, then our conclusions are at risk. They're sensitive to the fact that we didn't have everything we might have needed. One reason to check for balance, and the way I make the argument, is that if we're well balanced on all the X's, then it gets harder to argue that there's a U that really is out there that could change things, because you'd have to have a variable that was uncorrelated with all the X's you used, but important for Y. Because if the U were important for Y, it probably shows up in lack of balance, because it's also associated with the X's. So getting good balance is one way, is a good prophylactic against unknown variables influencing the treatment outcome comparison. But we had some X's. We did not have everything. There always, a critic can always come up with a U. How important does U have to be in order to really have a consequential result, consequential influence on our statistically significant result? And there's always critics, there's always haters. And so what Rosenbaum did to go beyond just a journalism exercise, could there be a U that's important, and maybe that's it, is to try to quantify all this. And that's where gamma comes from. How much do we mess up on the propensity score, or the odds of being in the treatment? And you have to mess up pretty bad to get a big gamma. And so gammas of 2 or 3 are a consequential mess up in the propensity score. Gammas of 10 means you really missed it. Propensity of 0.5 should be 0.9, et cetera, et cetera. And How big does gamma have to be in order for our result to be in peril? And that's the quantification and the sensitivity apparatus that Rosenbaum supplies. A great amount of history of Cornfield, who looked at basically sensitivity of lung cancer and smoking. Could there be something that, a third variable that caused that to happen? So that's a wonderful historical thing. And we get here on page 77 of Rosenbaum's text. People look comparable, may differ. We claim two people with a propensity score are equivalent on all the important things, but that doesn't account for the maybe use that change it. So a gamma, it tries to look at the odds of two people that are equivalent, but one may be, we call equivalent, but one may be quite different. To get to gamma 4, 5, or 10, you have to be way, way off. And so that's page 77. You can take a look at the little arithmetic at the bottom. So there's a couple of ways of doing the sensitivity analysis, and sensitivity MW and the examples will walk you through those. But find a gamma such that the result would be rendered non-significant is probably the easiest one to talk about. So, starting on PDF page 6, I showed you a result some time ago of just a quick Google search, and you can see there's a number of packages that we will look at, R-bound, sensitivity MV. There also are some additional things, sensitivity case control, which we'll talk about case control studies later on a little bit, or case reference studies, even instrumental variables. We have a few things for 2x2x K tables. We have a few sensitivity ideas. You could probably update the search just using Rosenbaum sensitivities, ourproject.org, and see that this list has expanded. But so this is a bit of an industry, and it's a very valuable industry. And it would be good if it were done even more than it is with observational studies. So here's just a couple of things just to document. PDF page 7 has Luke Keel, who Mike knows, at Penn State, and he does sensitivity analysis, but starting out with the matching package. So that's just taking a different route. One more thing that probably we could squeeze into this little session, but I'll point it out to you. It'd be a good little thing if you were looking for a project just to do an example using that other alternative package and run it through R-bounds, which also, as I mentioned, does 0-1 outcomes explicitly. We'll just kludge them and run them through as measured variables. It gives us reasonably good results. Another package from another Wharton person, cross-screening multiple hypotheses in pair-matched observational studies, including sensitivity. You can see these are proliferation of matching. And then we come to our main text, which is Rosenbaum's vignette from Observational Studies, a journal that Dylan Small has been editor of, so it's run out of Wharton. And package sensitivity MW is for matched pairs, one treated, one control. Or you could do 1-2. And that'd be a good little data manipulation exercise. I did the one-to-one for you. MV is for variable number of controls, and sensitivity full kind of does an extension of that, which we're not taking up here, but it's good to know about. Several tools, such as AID and Amplify. Amplify is a more advanced idea we'll mention at the end. Trying to break up gamma into two parts, lambda and delta. The part, one part that reflects how much we mess up on the propensity score. We say two people are equivalent on the propensity scores and they may be well off. And then the other aspect of that is, how much does that matter? That is, the if you has messed up our propensity score, but maybe it doesn't much influence outcomes. So you're trying to get at that. And that's a little bit harder. We'll mention it and show you the examples. But getting through the basics is really the core here, and trying to do it in a reasonable amount of time. So sensitivity MW from matched pairs will be our basic corpus today. And it has the full set of capabilities. Okay, so this vignette, along with Chapter 3 of Rosenbaum, will give you a full intro to sensitivity analysis and the basic ideas. What could have gone wrong, and was it consequential? So, what do the packages do in an observational study? Treated and controlled subjects may be matched to be similar in terms of observed or measured covariates, i.e. by the propensity score, but people who look similar in terms of measured covariates may still differ in terms of unmeasured covariates. The packages perform a sensitivity analysis asking about the magnitude of bias from non-random treatment assignment that would need to be present to alter the qualitative conclusions of a naive analysis, i.e. pretending what you have is enough in the X's, that presumes matching for observed covariates removes all bias. And if you've got good balance, you probably are pretty close. So the sensitive analysis assumes that one subject in a matched set may be gamma times more likely than another to receive treatment because they differ in terms of unobserved covariates. How much could the U's mess up our propensity matching? And the main way we'll try to calibrate how much you're off affecting outcomes is you have a p-value from your comparison using the naive model. How much different would the p-values be if you were extremely off? Gamma 2, gamma 4, gamma 10. How large must gamma be before the interval is so long that it is inconclusive, perhaps both accepting or rejecting the null hypothesis of no effect at the 0.05 level? That is, can we knock down the estimated treatment effect to a point where it's non-significant? And there's one-tailed and two-tailed versions of this. I use the two-tailed version of this so that could be wrong in either direction, and there's examples of that. And so SEMW and SEMV functions compute the upper bound of the p-value for a specific gamma. So if the upper bound is at most 0.05, then a bias of magnitude gamma is too small to lead to acceptance of the null hypothesis, or not reject. We should never accept. The SEMCI function inverts to obtain bounds for confidence intervals and point estimates. And we have various papers, and we have the text that goes through that. Mike gone through the derivation of that in a bit. So sensitivity MW is our basic one. We're going to use the ERPSIP and the Mercury data, and that's the manual that goes along with the vignette. And the original welder data came from my paper in Carcinogenesis, 1998, so it's not Cy Agent. That's on PDF page 12. Okay, so those of you who want to read the source, we're there. Okay, so section 3.5 of the Rosenbaum text, Welding Fumes and DNA Damage. It's a lovely story, occupational exposure. So PDF page 13 has the text, page 79 from Rosenbaum's text, section 3.5, is the welding fumes example. And it's a basic observational study, 39 male welders, and then controls, another 39 controls, and you try to match them the best you can. You only have a few matching variables. And this is a case where, as you can see on the next page, PDF page 14, We have gender, smoking, and age to match on. So that's not a whole lot. That's probably where sensitivity analysis is the most consequential, because there's a wide variety of views you could throw at this analysis as challenges. Have you gotten good enough matching for the welders to the controls? What we can do is do the matching and then see what we got. Table 3-1, we got modest matching, males, well, we got that, smokers, and we got decent on the age distribution, so we're doing a more extensive matching there. That's what we've got from the welders. Then let's go to PDF page 15, which is the beginning part highlighted of my R session, which just mimics what Rosenbaum went through. So it's good for you to replicate some of this. We install the package MW, and the data set that we're using is ERP, SIP, welder's DNA damage. And what we have is, this is how a sensitivity data set is formatted, is think of the outcomes in wide form. Every row is the matched pair, both a welder and a control, if you look at the head. And if you were doing a kludge of a full match, you'd just take the mean of the welders and the controls for each of your 150 subclasses. Here we have 39 pair matches, and we're doing it precisely. So dimension is each a match pair is a row. We have two columns. That's a sensitivity data set for MW for doing the basic. We want to take a look at box plots of welder and control, which is design of observational studies figure 3.1, and we can do a quick mean comparison of the match pair, and you can see we get a significant result, p-value of 4 times e to the minus 6. That's reasonably strong. That gets you a bunch of stars and a publication. Okay, it's a lot less than 0.05, but is this solid enough to withstand sensitivity scrutiny? What will it take to break it? That will be our gamma computation, which we will come back to on a replicate of this page later on. So that's our red box, beginning doing the basic descriptives of what we see for the outcome analysis. Rosenbaum does a lovelier version of that, and you can see that on page 81 of the text, which is PDF page 16. And he'll do some nice box plots, and you can see the welders seem to have a good deal more DNA damage compared to the controls after pair matching. Elution rates. Elution is a bad thing, right? And male controls age and smoking. And so we're going to ask, how big does gamma have to be? That is, how much are we off on our matches to get ourselves less confident with the result? So here on page PDF page 17, this is taken from the vignette, page 4 of the vignette, which walks through the analysis, which I replicated in my R session. So what we see from page of the Rosenbaum text, or Rosenbaum vignette, page 4 of the Rosenbaum vignette, is, and we'll replicate this in the session, is that it's going to take a gamma of 4, or close to 4, to negate our significant finding. At gamma equals 3, the one-sided p-value is 0.022. It takes gamma equals 3.5 or 3.3, and you could go at it more carefully, to get up to 0.025, which two-sided would be 0.05, and therefore negate the significant result. And think about it, a gamma of 4 is a pretty strong disparity. Think of it as two people, a welder and a control, that we both think have propensity 0.5, or 0.5. One of them is really 0.8. That's how far off you have to be in order to get a gamma of 4. Gamma of 3 is just a little less. So that's the amount of disparity it would take. So 3 still is still significant. We'll see that also from the confidence interval. 0.4 is that. So, and bottom of page 4, in a sensitivity analysis, is safe, though somewhat conservative, to obtain a two-sided p-value by doubling the smaller of two one-sided p-values. That's why 3 is still good, even for two-sided. 4 blows it for both one-sided and two-sided. Rosenbaum's inclined to take seriously one-sided. I believe the two-sided is better, but you can go, because you really don't know what direction, although a little bit hard to argue that inhaling welding fumes is good for you, but who knows? Okay. So in my own session, which is PDF page 18, we went through and ran SEMMW on the data set for the various gammas. And you can see gamma equals 3. We do indeed get 0.022, which would still be good on two-sided. That is doubling. And gamma equals 4, whether it's one-sided or two-sided, we're too big. So we can replicate that. That's the basic sensitivity analysis. It's, of course, more of a range of things than you're finding an exact p-value, but it gives you an idea how big gamma has to be. If it only is a gamma 1.2 that breaks your result, you're kind of wobbly. If it's a gamma equals 3 or gamma equals 10 that breaks your result, you're on a lot stronger grounds. I think that's the kind of global conclusions that are useful to draw from this. So just going to the manual page for sensitivity MW, we have our outcome. We have various kinds of methods. Weighted method sometimes is a little bit better. I think we'll look at that review question. Method H. Huber is a good alternative. The basic method, parentational t-test, is the one Mike worked out in lecture and is also our base method. Could set it. Okay, on PDF page 20, which is page 5 of the vignette. So we're just marching through the basics of the vignette. We're going to look at the second function, SEMWCI, which computes point estimates and confidence intervals for an additive effect tau, which I also do in my R session, and we look at both one-sided and two-sided versions of this. I find the two-sided more satisfactory. It's the same as the testing argument. So for gamma equals 1, you're just going to replicate the t-test, and we'll show you that in the R session. For gamma equals 2, then we're saying we're off, and a 0.5 match of two people, one of them's 0.667. Get you 2-to-1 odds for the other person. That's, so you're still off by a good bit. Now, what SEMWCI will give you is the point estimate has moved a bit from 0.57 to a range, and you get a confidence interval for the smallest and largest point estimate. Well, this is one-sided, so the minimum is 0.2, and of course it goes off on the end, but you could form a 95% interval, one-sided equals false, which is more satisfying to me. And we'll see that in the our session that we have here. So to SEMCI, now we're on PDF page 21, or the bottom frame of the short Ragosa R session where I just redid the basic commands. If we go SEMWCI, gamma equals 1, and we go one-sided equals false, which is at the bottom of the page, we're about to turn over to the next page of the PDF, but on the ASCII it would be continuous. Two-sided equals false, we get a two-sided confidence interval. We still get the same point estimate. as for the one-sided, because we're not moving anything. We're at gamma equals 1. We've done perfect. And if you go here, the confidence interval for gamma equals 1 on a two-sided matches the regular t-test, because we said we made no mistakes. Gamma equals 2 gets us in a slightly different situation. And if we go to the last set of these, SEMWCI, gamma equals 2, method T, one side equals false, so we're doing a familiar two-sided confidence interval, we get a spread of the point estimates from 0.41 to 0.74 instead of just 0.57. And the confidence interval then goes minimum, maximum. It still does not include zero because we're still good on the p-value sort of thing. Okay, and still on page 22, we'll come back to the what I call the amplify stuff, which requires us to put in sensitivity MV. So let's get an intro to that after we take a look at just some details of SEMWCI, which we have been looking at. And you can see in the manual page, one-sided and two-sided are easily given by the flag one-sided equals true or false. And a little more good explanation of SEMWCI is on page 14 of the manual page. So we have the manual vignette and Rosenbaum text. He's speaking to us from everywhere. Okay. Now what I call the amplify stuff, I'm at the bottom of my short Rugosa R session. We're at 30 minutes, so I should wrap this up. From the 2009 Rosenbaum JASA paper, there's an attempt, and it's in Sensitivity MV and other packages, to further break gamma up into two parts, the bias and assignment part of it and the bias and outcome. Something that messes up assignment but doesn't affect outcome isn't going to be consequential. So trying to get at gamma by breaking it up into two parts is hard going, but it's worthwhile noting. We're not going to try to do a lot of it, but I did some basic calculations there. And coming back to the vignette, of course, Rosenbaum does a more serious job of explaining it. So amplification interprets on page PDF 25, which is vignette page 6. Amplification interprets the single parameter gamma, which we've gotten a little bit comfortable with, in terms of two parameters. So now we're making it more difficult to really hone in on, but it's an interesting idea. Lambda controlling the relationship with the number of bias and treatment assignment. That's how much you're off in the propensity score. And delta, which is the consequential one, because that's your outcome bias, controlling the relationship between the unobserved bias and the outcome y. Here, lambda is the maximum impact of the bias on the odds of treatment, and delta is the maximum impact on the unobserved bias and the odds of positive response difference. A bias of gamma is equivalent to the curve. Here's how gamma and lambda and delta are related. That's what Amplify is trying to sort out for you. It's a tough road. Amplify and sensitivity MV requires a simple elementary calculations. Amplify gamma lambda, which I did in my R session, just to give you an idea, takes a scalar and a vector of lambdas and computes the deltas. And then the following call, and that's what I did. Page 6, that's what I did with Amplify at the bottom of my R session. Okay, and then we go through some explanation, page 7 of the vignette, and you can take a look at that. We do mercury in the review question, which is section 3.2 of the vignette. A little more on Amplify from the Sensitivity MV manual. We have the manual entry, which gives you the basic functioning of Amplify gamma lambda, and a little more repeating the definitions of gamma and lambda. And you can work through some of the tables and details here. If you come to actually try to do an Amplify analysis, that would be ambitious, but it may be something worth looking at if the data mean that much to you. The reference is Rosenbaum and Silber, 2009 in JASA. That's PDF page 29, taken from the Sensitivity MV manual. And again, page 30 of the PDF just refers you back to my little start of the Amplify analysis, which, better part of valor, I didn't try to proceed in real class. Okay, just a couple of added things as we close this down. From the package R-bounds, which I mentioned, it has various capabilities, instrumental variables, which we'll come to. It does some, so doesn't some of the instrumental variables packages do it, do sensitive analysis, and that's good to note. A little more Rosenbaum on PDF page 32. Just to give you the references, our, of course, 2010 design of observational studies. Just have some odds and ends here at the end of the PDF pages. IVPAC with Dylan Small, former student here at Stanford, and he has some sensitivity analysis as part of instrumental variables, which we'll come to, just to mention. And AR sensitivity CI is an interesting function. And IV model, which is a more recent graduate, Hansen Kang, who was good enough to do a stint in this course the first year it was offered. He has a number of sensitivity analyses for instrumental variables. So you can see it can be extended to various parts of the observational data analysis universe. So that's just a very quick, little bit haphazard tour of doing sensitivity analyses, getting the idea in here. The idea is a very important one, and at least doing the basics, getting a feel for gamma, I think is a valuable part of being introspective about the strength of your own results, and journal editors are getting more and more interested in this depending on the niche you're in. So let's call CC6 to a close at 37 minutes. This is more time than I usually have in class, so I should give it a go. Take a look at the review questions. There's a big nag to take a look at Rosenbaum's wonderful book, because we don't kind of put it in front of you enough, but the readings are wonderful, and the vignette provides you another intro. So we've got a couple of versions of Rosenbaum and a little bit of us. Thank you very much.